is a team building and leadership development company that has the privilege of working with more than 160 collegiate and professional athletic teams and corporations throughout North America annually. Welcome to our On the Attack podcast, where our most senior program leadership instructors draw from years of experience working with hundreds of clients and briefly share their powerful insights and thoughts on relevant team building and leadership development challenges. Today, Omri and myself are going to talk about the transfer portal. Now, I guess Omri kind of starting off, tell you what we're not going to talk about. This is not going to be a complaint session where we complain about how we don't like the transfer portal and make excuses and all that. Frankly, mainly because, well, the NCAA does not care about what Jake McDonald and Omri Rockmo think about the transfer portal. Transfer portal's here to stay. We can look at it from two standpoints. One, we can have a victim mindset, which we've heard a lot of coaches, frankly, make excuses about, well, this isn't fair and they're taking people from my program and all that. And they're right, I'm sure. But we can also look at things and take a warrior's approach to it, which we're just going to take ownership. We're going to take responsibility. The transfer portal is here to stay. There's no reason to make excuses, right? Those don't make us better. Let's find ways. Let's take ownership. Yeah, maybe things are happening. Maybe things that are not our fault, but we can take responsibility for it. We can take ownership. We can find ways to get better from it. So, Omri, what I'd kind of like to do is kind of break this down there's two parts of the transfer portal. One, I want to talk about, well, how coaches and leaders can take advantage of that. But then I also want to talk about how athletes themselves can look at it. So if we want to start it off with coaches, Omri, how do you think, how is the transfer portal affecting coaches and what's different and how can we take advantage of it?
Yeah, Max. So I think, just like you said, there's a couple of ways to approach it. In full disclosure, we know that the opinions that we form on this, although based on some experience, we don't share the same seat as our coaches, right? So we don't feel the same pressure, which for us can be an advantage because we can have a completely different perspective that we can then utilize and help our teams and turn it into an effective tool, which essentially is a better way to look at it as versus something that's just causing stress and bringing issues to our roster. And ultimately, if we're looking at the makeup of a team, you know, I know we've been in plenty of meeting rooms together, Mac, where a lot of times people would refer to their team as the 80-20 rule, right? The 20% of high performers and then the 80% of the rest. Or I've also heard the 10-80-10, which would be 10% high performers, 80% of the team, and then you got the 10%, which would be your lower performers. I think nowadays, if we're breaking it down from a percentage standpoint of people that are being highly recruited and we're utilizing that 10-80-10 standpoint, well, 10%, if I'm an 18-year-old kid and a different school is offering me six figures and I have the weight of my family that I need to take care of, and yeah, that's a tough place to be for a student athlete. However, from a coaching standpoint, the 10%, although might make significant differences for us and be game changers for us to an extent, the 80% is our team. 80% is our team. Those are the guys that are here to stay. Those are the guys that we really want to focus on because that's the makeup of our team. The way we do it, and in my opinion, the way the program teaches coaches how to do it is ultimately creating and developing a great sense of pride in the organization that we have a privilege of belonging to. How do we do that? How do you develop a sense of pride in the way you conduct every single day? Well, first off, know who you are. Second, more importantly, act like it every single day. There needs to be some weight on being one of us. It needs to be earned on a daily basis. One of the best experiences or one of the best examples that I think of when it comes to the power of cultivating pride around a certain ethos, program, or identity, I always like to take it back to the samurais. So I've been doing martial arts for a while, always been intrigued by that world. And in the past, when somebody would talk to me about the samurais, I would always think of this noble warrior, you know, well educated, well studied, takes care of his gear, the craftsmanship with the sword, all that stuff. And a couple of years back, I remember reading a book called The Bushido, which is the kind of the samurai code. And one of the things that came from it to me was pretty mind-blowing, because ultimately, if we were to break it down and simplify it, the samurais were mercenaries, right? They were soldiers that were in service of certain families in Japanese culture back in the day. And back then, there was a time where, hey, these guys wanted more money. Just like any employee in any organization, right? And one of the things that the main leaders, I believe it was the emperor back then, he decided to do was, well, he didn't want to pay him. Instead, what he did was he elevated their status in the community. So now these guys started studying philosophy and teaching it and became these respected figures in their culture. And if that's where you stand, well, now you have a purpose. Money matters a little less. Now we can view it from the standpoint of, oh man, he kind of played them, right? He got to keep the money and they were all happy. But really, look what came from it. We're sitting here hundreds of years later, and these guys are regarded to as these noble warriors. How do we apply that to a team? Well, if people start developing a sense of pride by carrying themselves a certain way, earning the logo that's on their shirt on a daily basis, that logo starts meaning a lot more. Because let's be real, if I'm being recruited by different schools and this guy's got this NIL for me and this guy's got TVs in the locker room and this guy has a sliding drawer in the locker room that has a bunch of shoes and crazy lights, whatever it may be, for the most part, the only thing I need, everyone's promising me the best college experience I've ever had. I'm ever going to have. Really, the decision to be made is, you know, what are your favorite colors? Do you want to have your best experience in orange? Do you want to have your best experience in red? Kind of that's where it is. I believe in what we teach and what we see every single day, and we get to do this as being a part of the program and the way we conduct on a daily basis. What it means to be a part of the team needs to come with a certain weight that needs to be earned on a daily basis so that we can actually take pride in being a part of it, which means we care about this team and we're going to do a lot to make sure that we stay, that everyone around us carries the same standard, that meets the same standard. And ultimately, from experience, people that care about a place are a lot less likely to be tempted to go to others. Barring, obviously, you're at a good place. You're in a good place to start with. Now, with that, Mac, let's take it into the framework of how do you think, or share with the team, or with our audience, for us, the way we conduct, the way we behave. Obviously, we'll tie this back into core values and standards. Can you talk a little about the process of how we define? How do we come up with standards? What's the concepts? How do we build that framework so that people start taking pride in who we are?
Yeah, sure, Omri. You know, I think it's more important than ever, right, to have our core values, right, our culture clearly defined. And now, for good or bad, again, we're not here to complain about the portal, but for good or bad, it's easier than ever for players to move on to different places, right? So that's why we think it's more important than ever to define a culture that we can take pride in, like you talked about, but also a clearly defined culture, because what's best for one person is not necessarily what's best for another person. And the process, when we look at our core values, right, and we figure out what those are, and then we assign behavioral standards to those core values that are specific black and white actions that we're going to undertake on a daily basis to prove, to back up, right, those core values and those definitions that we're talking about. Right. It's important that we explain those clearly to potential recruits that are going to come into our program. And for example, at the program, we're selfless, tough, and disciplined, right? We have clearly defined definition of those words. We also have clear defined standards, mission essential standards, actions that we're going to undertake on a daily basis, right? That are going to back up some of those core values. Now, when we interview newer teammates or potential teammates of the program, now, first of all, everyone who we've ever interviewed, as far as I know, Omri, has been extremely talented, right? They all come from elite military units and everything else, right? But obviously, we're not taking everyone, right? Because part of what I do, and when I interview people, I don't talk about pay or HR or any of that stuff. I talk about what our core values are, right? I explain our core values, their definitions, the standards that are associated with them. And then I allow them to know that as I explain selfless, tough, and discipline and some of our standards, if they like those standards, if they feel like those words encapsulate who they are and what's important to them, the program is going to be the greatest place they've ever worked. But if they don't feel like, you know, for example, we get a lot of men and women from elite military backgrounds who accountability has been a huge part of their lives for 20, 25, 30, sometimes 30 years. And sometimes you get individuals who they just don't want to do that anymore. What I explain to them is it doesn't mean they're a bad person. And it doesn't mean they won't be successful. They can go work for another company and be very successful, but not at the program. Because if somebody is not selfless, tough, and disciplined, not only will it not work out, right? They're probably going to get fired, but also, Omri, they're not going to like you, right? If they're not selfless, tough, and disciplined, they're just not going to like being on the road with us and they're going to leave. We look at the same way as part of a team, right? So when we get somebody coming in from the portal, sure, we're going to evaluate their talent, right? That's the easier part, right? Most coaches are going to be the same, but also, let's have a clearly defined set of core values and standards that we can explain to that potential recruit, knowing that if they can meet those standards, meet and exceed those standards, if those core values describe who they are as a person, then our program is going to be a great fit for them. But realize if they're not a great fit, yeah, sure, they can be talented and they can be great people, frankly, right? But when they come to their program, come to your program, if they don't fit with who you are as a program, they're not going to take pride in that. And I can pretty much guarantee that they're going to be hitting the portal again within the next season, right? I think that's why it's more important than ever to have those things clearly defined. Anything you want to add on that, Omri?
Well, I think that's number one. That's a huge point. And thanks for bringing that up. I think for us, when we're looking at how do you build a roster? Well, the most important part of it is the recruiting piece. And obviously, anyone listening to this, being a, if you're a coach, we're not going to teach you anything about recruiting, right? You know how to scout. You're going out to the field. You're seeing all these athletes. You're seeing prospects. You're watching tape. All these things. You can identify talent way better than we can. That's your job. However, just like you can identify that talent, Every other coach that's sitting in the stands with you, they can identify the same thing. So from a talent standpoint, and obviously talent matters, right? Because we're in this business to win. And whoever says they're not, well, probably not staying in this for long. Winning matters and we need talent in order to win. However, talent is going to allow you to win some games. Talent is going to have to be managed in a sense, especially if it doesn't align with you. And the reality is anyone listening to this right now has had a student athlete in the past that was extremely talented and did not align with who he is or she is as a coach, didn't align with what the team is looking from a character and culture standpoint. And they counted the days till that student athlete graduates or transfers out. So, yeah, we're going to look for talent. We're going to find the talent that we need. But then alignment with core values is so important, and it's going to make everyone's life easier, not easier, a lot more simple as we get down the road, because we're going to find the right people to do the right things with us. You know, Mac, thinking of this, if we're looking at the service branches, in terms of developing a sense of pride, but also by certain conduct and being fired up about who we are because there's a price of admission. You guys, being former Marines, probably one of the organizations that does that best in the world. And I say this, right, serving in the Israeli Defense Forces, take great pride in it. Everyone that was in my unit, right, once a paratrooper, always a paratrooper, and it was kind of very singular to our unit. However, I'd be a liar if I told you that people that were around kind of the supporting efforts, cooks, mechanics, shared the same enthusiasm. Some of them did, and obviously everyone's contribution to service is super important and nothing can get done without them. But the reality is, my experience of being around young men and women, the cooks wouldn't be as fired up as we are. Looking at the Marine Corps, right? I've gotten to spend some time with people that were working in the armory, but when they speak of who they are, they describe themselves as first a Marine, and two, you would think that they're, you know, Rambo's cousin walking around with a knife between their teeth, you know, 3 weeks out of the month taking care of business, where the reality is they never even tasted combat. And that shows the strength of the culture in the Marine Corps. I know it's not coincidental or accidental. How, from your experience, how does that happen? How do you get everyone to be so bought in on this ethos of what it means to be a Marine?
So, yeah. So Omri, just one thing I want to address with your past comments, you know, when we talk about our core values, and I know you agree here, but just because somebody doesn't fit with your program, and it doesn't mean they're a bad guy, right, or a bad person. We have plenty of teammates, or, you know, people that, you know, want to join the program who we feel don't fit our values. They're still American heroes, right? A lot of them came from elite military units and backgrounds and everything else. Just means it's not going to work out with our team, right? One of the high-level lacrosse team that I worked with recently, so when they came back from fall break, they kind of trimmed some of their fat. They had a couple guys not come back to the program. Those guys, because they felt that they didn't truly take pride in their program, they didn't fit who their core values were. So those guys kind of self-selected, and it made their program stronger because of it. But, and I think Coach did a great job of this, those guys that didn't come back, they're not bad guys. I mean, this is an elite academic school. Those guys are going to run companies in short order. They're not bad guys. They just weren't right for this particular athletic team. They didn't fit their core values. So Coach and they made the decision that they could just move on. So that's part of this recruiting process. We just want to make sure that we find people that truly fit who we are. And I think that's one of the things, you know, going back to the Marine Corps, I think that's one of the things we do really well, is that, you know, a lot of the other branches, they're having trouble meeting mission, meaning I'm not a recruiter, but they're having trouble getting their numbers up, right? Marine Corps has been the only branch that's consistently made mission. And I think one of the big reasons for that is that a lot of the other branches, it's a lot of what they can do for you. Now, Marine Corps, we have the advantage. We're the smallest, right? We can be the most selective. But a lot of the other branches, it's, well, hey, you know, we'll give you money for college. You can see the world. We'll give you applicable skills. And that stuff's all true. And a lot of that's true for the Marine Corps as well. But if you notice the Marine Corps commercials, we don't talk about any of that. We just talk about, all right, hey, if you're good enough, if you're tough enough, right, if you're one of us, maybe you can be one of us, right, someday, right? You can earn the title of being a United States Marine. And it doesn't matter, frankly, what job you go from there, just being able to wear our logo, the Eagan Globe and Anchor, sometimes to be able to take pride in that, right? That's a huge part of it. So it's more about challenging people, hey, to be one of us, rather than, hey, this is what we can do for you. So, so Omri, real quick, I just want to cover, so that's from the coaching perspective. You know, from an athlete's perspective, you know, how they can utilize the portal. And I'm not in a position to tell athletes whether they should or shouldn't transfer, right? Really for a few reasons. One, you know, when I played college football, NIL didn't exist. But even if it did, I wouldn't have gotten any of it, right? I wasn't good enough, right? There was never a point where I was going to be making money for my family. So that's one. And two is I didn't grow up rich. You know, my father was in the military, but I didn't have to worry about, you know, where I was going to sleep the next night. So frankly, I never had to be concerned about trying to make money for my family, and I never felt the burden of other people's lives on my shoulders. Those can certainly influence decisions. What I will caution athletes to do is, there's a term we talk about being long-term greedy. The way we look at things is that you've got things that are pleasurable, fun, and then you've got happiness. What we want is we want happiness, right? Too many people, they'll opt for those short-term pleasures. They'll opt for fun in that case. They'll make decisions that are not best for their long-term future, that aren't going to make them truly happy in the end. And, you know, if I can just give a quick military example of that, Omri, you know, when I was after my first deployment in the invasion of Iraq, I came back, and my unit, we were selected to detach from our parent unit and join another unit for a deployment back overseas. So what that meant for me is that I got kind of out of sync with the rest of my unit. They deployed. I was one of the few platoons kind of left back. And technically, I was working for this other unit. However, the way our base, Camp Pendleton, California, was set up, I was like a 30-minute drive from the rest of that unit. So what that meant is, really, I had no oversight. I could show up whenever I wanted, leave whenever I wanted. I had really nobody looking over my shoulder, knowing what we were doing. Now, at the time, I was living in Southern California, Dana Point, California, which was, I mean, one of the most awesome places in the world, in my opinion. I was in my mid-20s, right? That's a pretty awesome place to be, right? Plenty of surfing on the beach, bars, and, you know, beautiful women, all those things. I had the opportunity to have a whole lot of fun, right, when I was there. Because, again, I could have knocked off work at like 3 every day, right? Gone surfing, done stuff like that, right? I could have shown up, you know, went out the night before and shown up whenever we wanted to. But I didn't, though. It was pretty common that we would stay working our vehicles, training, doing all those things to 6, 7 p.m. You know, sometimes on Friday, sometimes we'd work weekends. I did that because I knew we were going back to combat, right? So I was willing to miss out on a lot of pleasure, a lot of fun, a lot of good times, which I probably could have had in my early 20s, right? Knowing that we were going back overseas. We went back overseas. We had a pretty kinetic, violent tour. We had a lot of firefights. We got done with our tour. We flew back, landed some Air Force base out in the desert, and loaded up on buses, drove back to Camp Pendleton. And then we turned our weapons into the armory. And then, as the platoon commander, I marched my guys back down to the parade deck, you know, said a few words, and then kind of released them. And then when I released my unit, you know, seeing all their, you know, moms and dads and wives and kids, you know, crying and running and jumping into their arms, knowing that we'd all come back home alive from combat, man, that to me, that was happiness, right? That was worth every, you know, surf session I missed or anything else, any of the good times I might miss, that was all entirely worth it for this point, right? So that's the way we look at being long-term greedy. And I think there's a lot of athletes out there who will make decisions, well, just based on what's good right now. Like, all right, we all want to play. We all want playing time. But sure, so maybe you're at a point where it's your freshman year, your redshirt freshman year, and you've got an All-American in front of you. All right, that you can learn from, that you can learn from, and you can learn from the coaches, and you can develop. But another school comes calling and says, hey, we'll let you play right now, but maybe they don't have a great culture that you can fit in with, right? Maybe they're not who you are. But a lot of times athletes will take that thing because at the moment, yeah, it's fun to play football. They want to play. They want playing time. They want to start right away, right? And so they're making decisions in the short term. They're making decisions for fun, for pleasure, right? Instead of just being long-term greedy. So maybe that means, yeah, you gotta bear your time at a program, right? You got to put in your dues and then learn from people. And then all of a sudden it's your junior, senior year, right? And you're absolutely tearing it up, right? So I just caution athletes again, you all decide what makes you happy, but then make your decisions, not what's going to be fun, not what's just going to feel good for you, what's truly going to make you happy, right? In the future, right? Then we want to make our decisions in accordance with that. So maybe that means you have to leave a program, but a lot of times maybe it means you got to stay with the program, put in your dues, right? Instead of just making short-term decisions, I'm going to get a little bit of money right now. I'm going to get a little bit of money, or I'm going to get some more playing time or something like this. And a decision that might end up hurting you in the long run. Anything to add to that, Omri?
I think to sum it up, when I hear you speak, the one thing that stands out is that true happiness lies in things that are earned. And the only way to earn things is through being showing resilience and grit in attacking certain goals and ensuring that we stay on a certain path and get after it and earn our spot. And if we're talking about athletics as being a tool or a vehicle for us learning great life lessons, right? And because you've heard us say it, you've heard Cap say it, athletics don't teach us lessons. Great coaches do, but also the process does. And when I learn to stay mission focused, because when I signed up to be a part of a team, I had a certain goal in mind, certain position in mind. Yeah, I'm going to have to earn it. And by the way, if you transfer out and you just get it, not going to be as rewarding. And the entire process of growth, well, you're selling yourself short because you're missing out on earning something that would be a significant part of your life. And I think that's where it's at for me. Seek those challenges. Be honest with yourself in terms of evaluations. Be open for coaching and mentoring, and make sure that you're doing, making the long-term greedy decisions to set you up, your team up, the team that you play on, and also every other team that you're a part of. And that's what I got for today.
Well, awesome. Thanks, Omri. The program and this podcast mission is to develop great teammates and leaders to create world-class teams. We hope we have done so. For more in-depth conversations, check out the program podcast and gain unparalleled insight into team cohesion, leadership development, and personal growth with program CEO and founder, Eric Kapitulik, as he speaks with corporate leaders, professional athletes, coaches, and authors. Our book, The Program, Lessons from Elite Military Units for Creating and Sustaining High-Performance Leaders and Teams, can be found at Barnes & Noble and Amazon. To sign up to receive our monthly letter on leadership or to learn more about the program and our leadership development and team-building services for your own team, go to theprogram.org. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at theprogram.org and on LinkedIn at the-program-LLC. Finally, if you have enjoyed today's On the Attack podcast, please leave a review of it on whatever platform you have accessed it from. Thank you, and attack.